class will love them.
Just because we play what the people want.
Yeah, please.
So them a call us
pirates.
Them a call us
illegal broadcasters. PTI tries to stop us, but they can't.
No. They cannot stop us. Welcome to episode 12 of the Interracial John Podcast. I'm your host, at Leslie Mack.
And I'm at Very White Guy.
And you're very white indeed. Welcome. We're coming to you from the suburbs of Philadelphia. You can find us online on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Just search Interracial John. That's J-A-W-N. We are also on Twitter. At Interracial John, and you can just search Interracial John again, J-A-W-N, on Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, and now Google Plus.
No, really?
Yeah, we're on Google Plus.
As much as I hate to have another social, I really like their UI on the mobile phone.
Yeah, it's interesting anyways.
All right.
And you can also just go to our website, interracialjohn, J-A-W-N.com, where you can find all of our episodes and also our spinoff shows. Speaking of which, we released episode 2 of the White Privilege podcast on Wednesday. It's also available on iTunes and on Stitcher Radio. Just search IRJ Presents. And that is our very own Very White Guy, along with Drum Beats for Peace.
Yeah.
And this week you guys had on AKA Charles Wade, which was awesome. He is headed today.
Yeah, right now he's on a plane.
On a plane to Geneva with the Ferguson to Geneva delegation.
Yep.
To bring the human rights charges that have been going on in Ferguson and in the United States directly to the UN. It's pretty exciting stuff, and the episode is fantastic. So I really encourage everybody to listen to it. It's really good.
Yeah, I think so the first episode was me and Drum Beats, and I think it was a lot of fire and brimstone. I think this latest episode, we had a little bit more tips and helpful information, and Charles was fantastic.
Yeah, he really was good.
He dropped one piece of knowledge, and you learn something all the time. I had this evolution of understanding, but we were talking about white people struggling to kind of eliminate their privilege when trying to be supportive and helpful. And I'm not a fan of the term ally, but nevertheless, he said something that it never occurred to me, and it was so deep. He said that he thinks white people in those arenas, when they're trying to be supportive and helpful, they're just unfamiliar with taking their cues from people of color.
Mm.
We white people, we're not accustomed to being secondary to people of color. When I said that, I'm married to you, so I'm used to it on a daily basis.
I'll be telling you what to do on the reg. But it's funny because when I was listening to it, I also thought that this is something that women in the workplace, especially in corporate America, run into.
Yep.
Where men won't take their female boss's lead. It's always she has to justify decisions she makes. She has to prove that this decision is sound one to her subordinates.
Sure.
When if it's a man, the man says this is what we're doing, and people just follow blindly. And so this is definitely, I see some correlation there.
Yeah. I guess a woman would prove its value, and then the man would co-opt it and present it as his own.
Yeah, present it as his own, exactly.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. So yesterday we actually had a really cool opportunity as well. We were invited to Princeton University to a panel discussion called Black Thought in a Time of Chaos. And the panel was two full-time Princeton professors, Professor Imani Perry and Professor Eddie S. Gloud Jr., along with the esteemed and outspoken Dr. Cornel West.
Yep.
For about an hour and a half. They had a discussion surrounding what's going on currently in the black consciousness and social justice, and kind of how that affects or connects or doesn't connect in some ways to the intellectual, high levels of educated black people, which I thought was a big theme of the talk and the topics that they covered. We're going to go in more detail on this in a future podcast, because they're going to make a good audio version of it available, and we wanted to play some really good clips. So I thought we could just talk about our two favorite quotes that we had. I mean, there were a lot. He's a soundbite machine. So I'll start with mine. At one point, the audience got to ask some questions, And one student got up from Princeton. I think she said she was a junior. And she had a long preamble to her question. But her end question was, how do we breathe without pain? And the whole room was just like, oh, boy, that's a tough one. Even Dr. Russ was like, wow,
yeah, that's deep.
A deep question.
I think he said that's a seminar on its own.
Yes, he did. And he followed up his that's a seminar on its own with, well, that's why we created the blues. And jazz, too. I'm not a flag waver. I'm a cross bearer. In the age of Obama, I've never seen so many black folks waving the flag. And what does that flag stand for? Liberty for all? No. Justice? No. It stands for power. But what is the ethical content of that power? So I thought that was a really, I thought it kind of summed up a lot of all the things he was talking about in that one sentence of just like confronting these things. And I really like that. You had another one.
Well, I even think to your quote, and we'll talk more on Sunday, it reminded me a lot of what Ta-Nehisi Coates was talking about when we saw him a couple months ago at Penn. And I just started to think, wow, how great and how lucky we are to be able to storm two Ivy League schools.
Yeah, we just rolled up on two Ivy League schools to see some, you know, national award winning writers. It's cool.
And I don't know if it's, if it wasn't, but again, I thought, wow, this isn't but a couple hundred people here. And maybe it's common at Princeton to have Cornell West
especially
there.
Yeah, I mean, he teaches there, so that's not a big deal.
For me, it wasn't common. I thought it was terrific. But so I thought this was great, and this got a huge kind of raucous applause. And I tweeted a few things, and this probably got retweeted the most. But he said, white Americans should give African Americans, when you see black people, a standing ovation, because in the face of 400 years of terror, they answer the calls for justice. And I thought that was, and I even, we said this in a podcast like maybe four or five episodes ago. It's like, can we just be nice to black people and like walk and be like, I'm fucking sorry you got to deal with systemic racism, oppression.
Right.
You know, and I you know, he said it kind of seriously and ironically, but there's some truth there.
No, there's some truth there. And one of the pieces I definitely want to make sure we touch on in the future, because I wrote a lot about this, is the idea of black rage and what it means both to black people and to white people in our society. Because that piece, I think, is really critical at getting to the heart of how to get through to white people who don't see how bad things are. This piece on black rage and their fear of it.
Well, and the one thing we cut out, we'll talk about on Sunday, about interracial relationships, what you can learn from it, was speak specifically to this. It's very interesting.
Interesting. Okay. So you'll hear more about that, but it was a wonderful evening. And thanks so much to our friend, Jen Losey, who works there at Princeton and invited us to the event. It was fantastic.
Yeah. She made a comment that she kind of knows Dr. West on like a first name basis.
Well, yeah, she does the events for the Center for African American Studies there. So like she planned his retirement party last year. Anytime he's there, she handles all of that kind of stuff. So yeah, they know each other quite well.
Yeah. And you got a
hug. Oh, and I forgot. Yeah, I got a hug on the way out. I was like, oh, thanks so much, Dr. West. And he said, oh, thank you. And he gave me a big, huge hug. And his beard is very soft.
Yeah, I think someone, one of my people said it's the coconut oil.
Oh, maybe it is. It was very soft. Just FYI.
His beard game
Anybody
is strong.
Anybody wondering out there, Dr. Cornell West's beard is very soft.
He's been bearded for a long time.
Yes, he has.
So what you wanted to talk about? Oprah, yeah?
Yeah, well, our girl Oprah. Somebody's girl. Oh, no. You know, she puts her favorite things out.
Just in time for shopping season.
Just in time for people to buy shit.
Yeah.
And every year it's ridiculous. But this year, looking at the list, I was just like, this is ridiculous. Okay. So three categories that I put together. She has
categories of ridiculousness?
No, I'll give you the categories in a second. She has 72 some odd things on the list. I'm not going through
That's
all 72.
That's a big list.
It's usually that big.
Okay. But she doesn't do the show where she gives that shit to everybody anymore, does she?
I don't know what she does now. I really don't. Okay. She doesn't have a show, so I don't know if she does it on another show on OWN. I'm sure they have some sort of show they'll talk about.
She's probably got a closet full of this shit just to give people to come over.
Who knows?
Let's hear this.
So my three categories are batshit crazy, which is just like, why in the world? Actually, what it does to me is it speaks to me as to who she thinks is watching and interacting with her.
Oh, we know. It's this wealthy white women.
Yes. And the second grouping is called
Gipley.
And then the third one is just like literally two things that I was like, you know what? I think this is a good price and these are good items. Okay. It's just two things on that last
one. That's a really... Okay.
So batshit crazy. I'm just going to go through. I'm run through them. She has a $700 Golden Beats by Dre set.
$700. These are headphones?
Headphones and like one of those pills or whatever they have. I don't know, whatever it is.
$700.
700 bones.
Good Christ.
I'll keep going. $365 copper tray and mug set.
For what?
Tea? I don't know.
Copper?
Yeah.
$300.
Yep.
For fucking tea.
Yes.
Good Lord.
$289 passport folder, like to hold your passport and luggage tags.
Wait a minute. It's just the little folio for your passport and tags for luggage.
And two luggage tags.
Is it Louis Vuitton? Who makes it?
It's silk and suede. Some random.
First of all, like,
$289.
That's presuming that everybody has a passport and travels and has luggage. And, and if you do have those things, that by golly, you need a $300 leather folio to hold it. That's absurd.
So a $500 yoga tablet.
What does that mean, a tablet?
First of all, it's made by Ashton Kutcher.
Okay.
God, and Jesus. It's a yoga tablet. I guess it shows you yoga poses. But the best thing of all is it has a built-in projector. So whatever space or hold you're in, you can see what's going on.
So it's like a virtual yoga thing?
I guess.
And it's a tablet. It's like an iPad tablet?
Yeah, yeah.
And the only thing it does is yoga?
Yeah.
That's the
500 bones.
Fucking dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, all of these. I said it was batshit crazy. That's the section.
I'm with you. This is batshit crazy.
Yeah, yeah. A ballpoint pen that costs $36. Just one pen.
Just one.
Yep.
Okay. Does it write in your blood? What's the...
Nope. As far as I can tell, it's just, you know, pretty and it writes just as good as any other 50-cent pen.
Okay.
$36.
Okay.
The complete holiday candle collection set. Four candles. $240.
What the fuck? $400 for four candles?
Yeah. That's crazy.
You know, Yankee Candle exists.
It does.
That's a thing.
Mm-hmm.
What are the candles? What is it, like a scent? I don't understand how that can cost that much.
I guess it's like whatever they use to make it. Who knows?
White women's tears? It's what ridiculous. Do they make these candles with?
Maybe.
That's crazy.
Those are very precious. Lauren Long pajamas, just a set of pajamas, $155.
She's always got pajamas on.
Yep, $155.
Yeah.
Okay. The Riva watch by Tory Burch. $395. Now, I know from you think that's not a very expensive
thing. I like watches. I really like watches.
But this watch can literally be worn with like three things.
Why do you say that?
Because just the design of it. It's like white, and brown.
Is it ceramic? What's the...
I don't know.
That's the new thing in watches is ceramics.
Well, it's stupid. It's got some weird Tory Burch logo on it.
I'd pay $300 for a watch, but...
It's $400, so let's say $395.
But I'm batshit crazy when it comes to watches.
True that.
So.
The Charlie V-neck, and I'm not joking, this is a V-neck T-shirt. You can get three of them for $214.
That's like the Kanye West hip-hop T-shirt for $200. That's
what
crazy.
What is wrong with this?
That's crazy. And the fact that she puts this list together and includes all this shit, you're right. This is, it's indicative of who she knows is watching her show.
Yep. Okay. So there's only two more in the batshit crazy section. Waterproof suede slippers, which cost $120. My thing is this. They're fucking slippers. Why do they need to be waterproof?
Well, because they're suede, and suede's normally not waterproof.
That's good and well. Then don't, like, wear your slippers outside. Sorry, it's like, fucking slippers.
I was just thinking, like why do you need indoor slippers to be waterproof?
That's what I'm saying. That's my point. Slippers, don't, regardless of what they're made of, don't need to be waterproof.
I have some, like, fuzzy-lined, like, Sanuk shoes that I wear outside, but they're not slippers. They've got, like, a sole and shit. And they're not waterproof.
Right. And then she has a nail color set. $144. Nine nail polishes, which work out to $16 each.
Well, let me ask, and I...
Now, I'm a nail polish connoisseur.
I know. I built you a shelf just to hold
nail polish.
I'm a nail polish
connoisseur.
You have
even
a shelf.
The most expensive nail polish, if you buy them solely, singly by themselves, at the high end, is $15 each. This shit is a dollar more, and you're buying it in a box? What the hell is going on here?
And are they, like, just colors? Or they
yes,
have...
they're, like, she's, like, they're nudes and peat. There's not even anything special
it
about it.
It doesn't have, like, sparkly or glow-in-the-dark or any sort
nope.
of...
Nope.
Is it the for-free stuff, though, or...?
Yeah, everything is easy.
Yeah, okay.
But $16 each, it's just ridiculous.
That's a lot on the... Like, that's, like 15% of the things on her list are batshit
crazy. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what was the other one? Was Girl Please?
So, yeah, let's hit that one up.
Okay, hold on. Let me get my... I got to cue it up here.
Girl Please.
So I'm going to keep that on lock.
So the sections in the Girl Please are items that Miss Oprah herself make money off of.
And you said this before. I didn't quite understand. You mean these are like things her company sells?
Yeah. So I'll just go through the list. The first one is the Moments I Know For Sure book. It's a book she wrote from her columns and her magazines.
So Oprah's favorite things is her fucking book.
Yep.
Oh, my Lord.
Number two are the Nate Berkus plates at Target. I know she gets a percentage of anything that Nate.
Sure, he's part of the empire.
He's part of that. The Oprah's Teavana Chai Tea Set at Teavana. That's her specifically branded tea.
Yeah, please.
And that probably goes with the copper tea.
Maybe it does. Yeah, maybe it's all together. The thing is that these are just the things I know for sure she has her hand in. My hypothesis would be she probably has a hand in everything.
Yeah, she probably has some sort of
a... That's like my hypothesis. You know, but these things are like very specific, so I'm able to point to them.
Can you click from her site and buy them from her site?
No, you go to the other person's site.
But there's still maybe some sort of affiliate promotional...
Well, let me finish it up. All right. The 100-Foot Journey Blu-ray disc. This is a movie she produced with Steven Spielberg.
Okay.
So every... dollar that you purchased goes to her.
She's a producer.
She produced the movie.
Yep.
The Peace Love Oprah Collection t-shirt, $98 per shirt, I might add.
Wait a minute. A t-shirt she's selling costs $100.
Yep.
Yeah, please.
The Oprah and Deepak's Meditation Transformation Trilogy, $100.
No, but see, I like her and Deepak, but they do it for free. Like you get the 21-day meditation challenge.
Yeah, and then they make you buy something.
Okay.
The Beauty Express Brow Kit by Anastasia, who she has been bankrolling, her brow person.
Okay. Eyebrows on fleek, Oprah says.
And the O Circle of Friends gift tier membership, which is membership to her gift site where you get special discounts and stuff.
Yeah, please.
Fuck's sake. Now she's literally saying on her favorite things is a membership to her fucking club.
Yep.
Maybe she's been on this path a while, but good golly, it seems just...
It's bad.
Egregious now.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. So that's the end of that. But and then there were two things that I thought, okay, these were actually kind of cool.
Two. Out of 72 items.
That's true.
Two.
They're both priced at $130 each. One was the GoPro Hero. It's a new GoPro. They're selling it at Target, and it looks really cool. And I thought the price for what you get was really good, $130.
Okay.
And then the other one was a really beautiful Forte 13-piece cutlery set and block, and that also was $130, and I thought it was a good value for some good knives.
For knives, that's a decent price. Yeah. We paid more for our knives.
Yeah, well, we have more knives than they have.
That's true.
Yeah, so I thought both of those, were out of all 72, those were the two that I thought, okay, this was worthy of bringing to people's attention, and it would make a good gift and was reasonably priced for that gift.
That whole thing's insanity to me.
Yeah, it's nuts.
I don't want to be totally crapping on her because I think she's done a lot of good in the world, but maybe she's just really rich and comfortable, and now that machine's rolling, and just keep it going, I guess. Because that just doesn't seem like a – I don't know what – to me, it used to be, at least maybe I'm incorrect, when she was giving all the stuff to the audience members, and there were more reasonably priced things. There were things that were –
I think when it started out, there were two things at play that I thought have been lost. Based especially on this list.
Okay.
One was, it was a lot of discovery items. So it was really stuff that people didn't know about.
Right.
And it was trying to bring attention to Spanx, to just things that people didn't know about, and give these small companies a boost and be like, oh my gosh, we just got a huge influx of people even knowing who we are. We're a little boutique type of, provider or manufacturer. Mm. And Oprah thought our thing was cool, and now everybody knows about it. Okay, so, and I thought that was great. It was part of the discovery portion of it. And then the other part of it was things that she had found that probably not everybody could afford, but it was neat to see how the other half lives. And those were, I would say, maybe 15% of the things. Almost all the other, and then the third thing was that she did so many things that were reasonably priced, where right. The average person could actually purchase them. And I feel like all three of those are just lost.
Well, and you used to be able to, I would say of the items, a fair number could be bought at Target. And
absolutely.
Now it's one.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, it's pretty crazy. But anyway, so that was my take on Oprah's favorite things this year. Girl, please.
You know, we were talking the other day about for Halloween, the number of Elsas we saw.
Oh, good God.
And we were talking about Halloween costumes. And I didn't want to talk too much about it, but I found on I think it was CNN.
We have our friends, Tyler and Jen. They have three daughters. Two of the three of them were Elsa, and the other one was Anna.
When we saw a picture of I think it was like a kindergarten school.
Right, and it was like
80% of Elsas.
Yeah.
And then around our neighborhood, I couldn't count on both hands the number of Elsas and Frozen costumes I saw. So I saw the number. You want to take a guess on how many were sold this year, 2014, Elsa costumes?
1 million?
3 million.
3 million?
3 million.
Oh, my God.
And how many girls that age are there?
That's what I was trying to. Did they each get three costumes?
I don't have the figures, but in the context of that article, they weren't just talking about the Frozen 3 million costumes, but just the behemoth, the juggernaut that it's turned into for Disney.
Oh, it's huge.
The licensing,
the only album that went platinum this year.
Right. 3 million copies. The only one.
Now keep in mind, Beyonce released an album.
Yeah.
Taylor Swift released an album. Frozen went platinum.
Yeah, it's crazy. And I forget which kids we were with. Maybe it was Francine and Laz's kids that hadn't seen Frozen. I'm like, what? I don't even have kids and I've seen that fucking movie
six times.
They
got a lot
times.
Of boys in that family. That's why.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But I just thought that was crazy. 3 million Elsa costumes were sold this year.
And they black.
That's you're right. I should have said that their kids are black. That's maybe less likely to be Oprah. Well, let's. And speaking of Francine's kids, you remember when Titi was here? She kept saying that thing that was really funny.
Yeah.
Ebola is going around crazy. Ebola.
So I got her to record it, and she was just saying this like off the cuff. She's 9.
So funny.
And she's friggin' hilarious. And she's talking about Ebola going on crazy. Ebola. But so we had a couple things. We haven't talked about Ebola before because a lot of people are talking about
it. Too many.
But there were a couple things that we thought were worth mentioning. And one you said, I guess it's done in Texas.
Yeah.
So
this is from ThinkProgress.org. The 21-day monitoring period for the people who may have been exposed to Ebola in Texas is drawing to an end, and no one else has exhibited any symptoms of the virus, health officials announced on Thursday. The last person who could have come in contact with Ebola after a Dallas hospital treated an Ebola-infected man from Liberia is expected to be cleared on Friday. That would be today. That individual, whose name has not been released, is a hospital worker who handled potentially hazardous waste on October 17th. And then the two nurses who did contract it have both completely recovered and returned to their families. And at the conclusion of the monitoring periods, which have been staggered depending on when the individual had contact with each of those victims of the disease in Texas, has helped ease fear significantly in Texas, where rampant anxiety about Ebola has led to some irrational behavior.
Some irrational behavior.
Let me just give you a few examples. In recent weeks, people have refused to serve Liberian immigrants at restaurants. Denied college admissions to immigrants from the affected West Africa region.
Good Christ.
Rejected housing applications from Liberian individuals. And even stopped volunteering at an organization that provides after-school tutoring in immigrant neighborhoods.
Oh, Texas. Really? That's just fucking crazy to me. It's just... And I hate to say, like, congratulations, I guess. They're quarantined and their fucking fear tactics, I'll put air quotes around, worked. Because it's... no longer a threat, I guess.
But
their
fear, but fear attacks didn't stop it from. I mean, it's like it's.
Of course not.
It was so contained. They had one patient that this all came from. It wasn't an outbreak at all. It just was one person and two people that were directly linked to that one person got it. An outbreak is okay. We have multiple sources and it's spreading everywhere. It's like they don't even understand the concept of scientifically what that means. But anyways, so yeah.
Was it on our podcast or AUA where we were talking about? The comparisons to the HIV outbreak. And just
I was talking about it. That was on the AUA. Yeah, I was talking
it's
about
just,
that.
It just seems identical, right? You know, here's a group of people that, you know, maybe are marginalized, specifically in Africa, and we're just stoking fears and going crazy. It's just nuts to me. Well, so I guess Texas is, I don't know, done with Ebola or not the fear, but they've done whatever. So in Kentucky, a teacher has had to resign over fears from parents. So a teacher in St. Margaret Mary Catholic School in Louisville, Kentucky, returned from a medical mission trip to Africa and has to resign rather than submit to a paid 21-day leave, producing a doctor's notice that says she's in good health. It's just so ridiculous. And the school requested this due to strong parent concerns. It's always somebody that's concerned.
But I mean, at some point, don't you have to say to the parents, like, well, we're the professionals and we have procedures and they've been followed and shut the fuck up.
Yeah. So she sent a letter to the
arts. It's this idea like, oh, it's because they're a parent. They're a kid.
That's that narrative, right? Somebody's scared. Somebody's, you know, this and that. And we have to kowtow to it. But she sent a letter saying that these unfounded fears are triumphing over truth and reason. She's a registered nurse, traveled to Kenya with her husband, a retired orthopedic surgeon. Again, helping people. And now she's, you know, had to resign rather than have a 21-day friggin' forced paid quarantine. And this is not really related, but it's from New York Magazine, New York Mag, and I don't think too highly of them. The photo they have is a photo of Africa, and it's tagged stock credit from Shutterstock, where the giraffes and the zebra is.
Mm.
That's the photo that New York Mag used. You couldn't get a better picture of Africa? Good golly, New York Mag. Stupid. Crazy. So it's a little more serious. You had a call, was it yesterday?
Yeah, I was happy to be on a conference call yesterday with a bunch of St. Louis area clergy and also some other Unitarian Universalists from across the country. We've been doing kind of formed a think tank to help put together resources for UU congregations and the general public to use in response to what's going on in Ferguson and what will be going on once the grand jury comes back. So things like different readings people can do, sermons, things for religious education, de-escalation procedures. So, you know, when you are participating, how to kind of be a force to keep things safe and nonviolent, some instructions on how to host a vigil, that kind of thing. So we've kind of been meeting to just pool our resources and decide where things are going to go. And we've also put together a letter that's going to be going out to all UU congregations and ministers with some things to do prior to the verdict and then after as well.
Hmm. Just real quick, was this part of the UUA, the New Jim Crow Task Force?
No, this is just a bunch of UUs.
Wow, so not coming from Boston?
No.
Okay, that's terrific.
Coming from Boston.
And I think it's, like you said, it's quite timely. Everything I'm reading is indicating the non-indictment is imminent. They're ramping up with, you know, command centers and things. It looks like it's going to happen
Tuesday.
I mean,
they've got tanks on the ground there where there's no, you know, military bases anywhere near Ferguson or St. Louis.
Well, I'm thrilled that you guys are working on action items for, you know, response from people that are far.
Yeah, you know, we'll see. So two things that came out of the call, though, because quite a few people that are on the call are St. Louis and Ferguson area clergy. And they made it's very clear that the people in Ferguson, they have so much that they're working on and so many things that they're needing to deal with right now in preparation for the pending grand jury announcement. So they had a press conference a couple of days ago where they put forth this Don't Shoot Coalition, which is a coalition of a bunch of different organizations there in the area and protesters as well, protest leaders, I should say. And they kind of held this press conference to say, listen, we know that this is going to be a difficult time. And so we've put together some rules of engagement that hopefully they can get the law enforcement officials there to agree to. So, you know, they put it forth, and there's a few things that I think I'm hoping that will be taken into account. You know, there hasn't been much reply from law enforcement. I have heard them say that they agree with the spirit of the rules and kind of what the coalition's trying to do, but I don't think that they're going to be. I don't think they're going to be for taking instructions from, you know, from the protesters, quote unquote.
They're in favor of the spirit of the rules because they are nonviolent in its nature.
I mean, the first rule is the first priority shall be preservation of human life. So it's hard to be against that.
I wish they would take that.
I wish they would have proposed these rules.
Yeah.
Would have been awesome to say, hey, you want to make sure. Yeah.
No rubber and wooden
bullets.
Yeah,
a few things that are interesting that I thought were really smart that they asked for, which was that police would give protesters a 48-hour advance notice before the grand jury decision is announced. And while it's not illegal for that to be done, I don't think it's ever been requested or done before. Generally, it just happens in whatever timely manner it happens. But certainly, these are unique circumstances, and that it would be in everyone's best interest for there to be preparation on all sides, I think.
And is anyone talking about, from the police side, like, you know, there's going to be grief, outrage, anger, emotion. And on some level, there's just a need to be heard. And, you know, I would love for them to, you know, rather than here's the protest zone, walk here, stand there, don't do this, just, you know, allow people to have their voices be heard, give them a platform to be heard, because that's what they're doing. They're suppressing people's desire to be heard.
Yeah. And they touch on that a bit. They ask that, that they provide with the public a clear chain of command of knowing who is making decisions and what decisions they're making and how to deal with that and what the level of escalation should be from the police. They want clear standards of professionalism and sound community-friendly policing will be maintained and adhered to at all times. They want police wearing minimal attire as far regarding their safety, and that specialized riot gear always be avoided until it's a last resort. They would like crowd control equipment like armored vehicles, rubber bullets, tear gas, and rifles not be used. They would like the police and other government authorities to not interfere with the free flow of information through tactics such as limiting cell or internet access.
And I got to tell you, you know I'm a conspiracy nut, but I just – everything we see and hear it in the depths that the police department has gone already to sort of, you know, we just talked on our last podcast about the no fly zone, and it was clearly a media ban.
Yeah.
They just, you know that they're going to, and you can have a cell phone blocking technology fits in like a briefcase. You know, they're just, I guarantee, and they follow Basram, all these other live streamers. They know who they are. They know where they are. They talk about them on these, you know, St. Louis cop talk forums. And they are going to employ counterinsurgency, counterintelligence tactics. And I'm scared. I mean, what else is, you said these are 19 rules of engagement. Maybe you let us know where we can find it and give us a couple other highlights from the list.
You can just go to don'tshootstl.org. We went through quite a few of them already. It just asks for a lot of different things having to do with engagement with the police. They don't want them to do mass arrests. They want them to just arrest individual lawbreakers and just a bunch of stuff like that. And again, you can just go to don'tshootstl.org and you can find the information about the group and also the rules of engagement.
I think it's great that there's actually a list of items. I think sometimes, at least I haven't always seen, you know, what's the goal, what's the purpose, what are the, I don't say demands, but I think it's great that they've put this together and you guys are talking about it and spreading the word.
Yeah, they actually have a list of demands generally for the group as well, independent of just this one engagement request. But yeah, it's a good group for sure, and they're doing a lot of great work. But my point was that, you know, it's a lot of things that they're doing there in St. Louis, and rightfully so. You know, they really are going to be dealing with a lot, generally speaking. And, you know, they need all hands on deck there on the ground and really don't have the bandwidth, nor should they be expected to be worried about what's going to be a reciprocal response in New York or Chicago or wherever. And it's kind of disappointing to me that they're like these national organizations like the ACLU or the NAACP or just all of these different national organizations that there isn't a call for a united response. And it's kind of disturbing. A lot of cities are planning things. I'm trying to get a lot of the leaders from as many cities as I can together in the next couple of days, just so we can pool information and say, this is what's going on in Oakland. This is what's going on in LA. This is what's going on in Dallas. And encouraging people to find that information and get it to me so that we can make it available. But it's kind of weird that's not happening. And I don't know why that is. I don't know what it is about this. I think, you know, part of it is an old school, new school thing. And I think that it's a difficulty. A lot of the high up members of the NAACP are certainly wealthy and ensconced in the system the way that it is and are unable to separate themselves from the trappings of their success. And so we're left with, you know, a rudderless and leaderless national coalition of people working on these issues, and it just doesn't work the way that it's going right now. And it's a void, and it's needed badly. Yeah.
When we talked about that on our podcast, I think it was a couple episodes ago, about just this movement, the sort of traditional top-down hierarchy, it's really not the way this is going to change. And even last night, Dr. Cornel West said, you know, there's old school, new school, and the folks in Ferguson on the ground, they're new school, and they've got it. They know what they're doing. But you're right. I think that those of us from afar, we need to sort of support them and support people that are having these same sort of needs and desires to...
But I also think I've heard this from so many people, like, well, we want to wait and take our cues from Ferguson. It's like, don't worry about them. You know why? Because...
Worry about yourself.
Yeah, because they're worried about themselves, and they need to be. And the last thing on their mind is any sort of national agenda. It can't be right now. It's upon the rest of us that are not on the ground in Ferguson to be worried about the national agenda, because that's the support they need.
Yeah.
They need us worrying about the stuff they can't be worried about. Trust me, they got it.
Yeah, and you said they're worrying about a lot, like, literally life and death.
They're worried about their city burning down. They're worried about loss of life. They're worried about liberty. They're worried about incarceration. They're worried. I mean, they are really worried, and they have every right to be. They have every right to be. If you saw, I mean, we all saw the response from St. Louis and Missouri to their general protesting just for Mike's death.
Hmm.
When this man is never going to even be held accountable for it, they are worried, and they are worried with good reason. And I applaud all of them working tirelessly day in and day out. It's been 91 motherfucking days.
Yeah.
91 days that Leslie McSpadden and Mike Brown Sr. have gone to bed without their son.
Mm.
91 days that these protesters have been out in the rain, now in the cold, in the heat over the summer, protesting.
Crazy.
91 days that Mike Brown's killer has been living life free.
Paid. He's on vacation.
So, you know, sit with that 91 days.
You know, I don't know. You and I haven't even talked about this dynamic, but the assumptive non-indictment of Darren Wilson is just so, it's like a given. We all know the history. We know what the leaks, you know, you can see the writing on the wall, but nevertheless, knowing it is maybe, I don't know. I'm wondering how I'm going to react. Like, I know it's going to happen. I know that they're not going to indict Darren Wilson, but when that's announced, it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough.
It's going to be very hard. It's going to be really, really difficult. I think for all of us, I mean, any of us that were moved by Mike's death, are going to feel similarly. I don't know how else to say it. I think that, you know, I've heard a few people ask, like, oh, why is this one so different? Why is it so much different than, let's say, Trayvon Martin? I said, well, first of all, Trayvon Martin was killed by a civilian, a person.
Right.
And I don't agree at all with George Zimmerman getting off for that murder. However, I think from a public point of view, you don't see the machinations of law enforcement at play the way that you have in this case. And for me, the tide turned when they released the footage from the grocery store.
The dog whistle. Yeah.
Once that dog whistle was put out, there was no turning back for me personally. And I think for a lot of people who have been so strong, because it's just insult to injury. It's just, listen, you murdered him. And here, this is what you want to do? Before you even tell us this person's name who killed him
ridiculous.
In the street like a dog and left him there for his entire community to see his blood running down the street, your first inclination is to character assassinate him?
Well, and because it works.
They tipped their hand.
Yeah, they did.
They tipped their hand, and they let us know what was going on, and that's the difference.
And I would say that in addition to that, sort of the difference for me is that, you know, once you start seeing and your eyes are open and you kind of see what these tactics are and know what their intent is, it's just, it's like egregious. Like we talked about this again the other day, that the current level of, just call it supremacy and racism and the shit that's going on, it's like they're not even trying to hide it.
No.
They're not even trying to hide the fact that, like, heh, this is going to fucking work. Here you go. You know, Mike's a thug. He's a dog whistle. He deserved to die. And I don't know if I can find it, but I remember Sean King talking about, maybe it was on Twitter, that he had a petition, right? There was a petition going around, and I forget what it was for. It might have been for body cameras, but it was getting, before they announced that video, before they released that video, it was getting thousands of signatures a minute. It was being shared on Facebook, let's be honest, by white people, by white people. He could see on a graph of signatures on a change.org petition, it just plummeted. Within an hour of that fucking video being released, the number of people signing that petition just dropped off a cliff. Literally, you know, and the way they're doing stuff, like you said, it's just obvious. It's plain as the nose on my face. And I think that for me is the difference, is that just, it's like, it's just egregious. There's no other way to describe it. And the fact that they're potentially going to get away with it on this grand scale. Oh, it's heartbreaking. Heartbreaking. You want to move on to something less depressing?
Actually, no, something just happened. I think we're going to have to just touch on it real quick.
What's that?
Pointergate.
Oh, man. That's ridiculous.
So, Minneapolis, Minnesota, one of their, I'll put quotes around this, big time quotes, their ABS local news affiliate, KSTP, ran a news story, and the story was reported by one J. Coles. You can follow this racist pig at J-K-O-L-L-S. KSTP on Twitter. He's continuing his racist tirades even as we speak. He reported and posted on, first started on Twitter, why would Mayor Hodges, this is the mayor of Minneapolis, flash gang signs with two times convicted felon? Find out why police are fuming in 10 minutes on 5 at 10.
Fuck.
And then they filed the story.
Let me play the audio here.
Yeah, let's do it.
Law enforcement sources alerted us to a photo that has them fuming over the actions of Minneapolis Mayor Betsy Hodges.
Law enforcement.
They want to know why the mayor would take a picture with a convicted criminal while he and the mayor flash gang signs. Five Eyewitness News reporter Jay Coles obtained that photo and explains why officers think the mayor has put the public and police at risk. It's a story you'll see only on Five.
Only on Five.
This is a photo of Minneapolis Mayor Betsy Hodges.
She's pointing, by the way.
With a man flashing what law enforcement agencies tell us is a known gang sign.
Let them get their story out and then we'll...
Court records show the man with the mayor has several recent convictions, including two felonies for selling and possessing drugs and illegal possession of a gun. He is currently sentenced to 5 years in prison, but won't serve that time if he stays out of trouble for the next 3 years.
Anger, frustration, she's putting cops at risk.
Michael Quinn retired after 30 years as a police officer. 25 of those years were spent with Minneapolis police, where he also managed the internal affairs unit.
The fact that they're flashing gang signs back and forth at each other, showing solidarity with the gangs, she's legitimizing what they're doing. She's legitimizing these people that are killing our children in Minneapolis. And I just don't get it. It hurts.
Law enforcement sources tell us they found this photo on the man's Facebook page while they were doing investigative work. They say there's no evidence he belongs to a gang, but they say he has connections to gang members. Quinn says the photo creates a safety problem for every officer in every gang unit in the metro.
And she's giving the gang something to flash around and say, look, we've got the mayor on our side. Even the mayor's with us. That's bad.
The mayor's office sent these photos taken the same day, just over a week ago, at the same Get Out the Vote event in Minneapolis. The mayor also declined our repeated requests for an on-camera interview. But she issued a statement about the photo that says, in part, the more supportive we all can be of people who are making better choices now, the better off we will all be in the future. A spokesperson concludes by saying, quote, she and the man in the photo are just pointing at one another, to which the head of the police union says,
she's been around long enough, she knows better.
John Delmonico is the president of the Minneapolis Police Federation.
When you have the mayor of a major city with a known criminal throwing up gang signs, that's terrible.
He says it crosses a line and puts police in a bad spot.
Is this something that could incite gang violence in the city? And for as critical as she can be with the cops, Is she going to support gangs in the city or cops?
Several sources in separate law enforcement agencies tell us they are extremely angry about the photo, and Michael Quinn says he understands why.
They're going to be pissed. They've got to be angry about this. They have to be.
We also asked Minneapolis Police Chief Janae Harteau to comment on the photo, but she declined. And we also tried reaching the man in the photo with Mayor Hodges, but we couldn't connect with him. We even asked the organization he worked for, but they declined to help us. Reporting in the newsroom, Jay Coles, 5 Eyewitness News.
Fuck that guy.
You know, there's so much about that report that's disgusting. Honestly, we can't even talk about it now. We don't have time, but let's do this. Sunday's show, we're going to record Sunday. I want to devote solely to dissecting this video, this report, and a discussion about dog whistle politics, dog whistle media, and dog whistle law enforcement hand in hand. So let's spend our whole time talking about that.
That's, you know, for the listeners, Carl and whoever else, no more important episode probably than the one we're going to do Sunday. That's crazy.
And I will say just so if for people that don't end up listening to that one, that the gentleman in the photo, yes, he had been convicted, but was working on behalf of Neighborhoods Organizing for Change, literally knocking on doors, registering people to vote. The mayor took the picture with him, and there's video of them as they were documenting their door-to-door with the two of them kind of joking around saying, how are we going to take this picture? What pose should we use? Okay, they literally were just pointing at each other. The third thing I would mention is that the police chief that didn't have a comment was on the scene and with them during all of this time. So you'd think she would have mentioned if there were anything.
And again, we'll talk more Sunday,
but a few other pings that came up to me.
Sure.
She's the police union president. She's critical. She's so critical of the police. Is she going to be on the side of the gangs now? That's an agenda.
Yeah.
And that's an agenda that he's making clear. This bitch came after us, and now look what she's doing.
Yeah.
Okay? That's number one, I'll say. Number two, this Jay Coles, I'm going to mention his Twitter handle once again. It's at JKOLLSKSTP, and it'll be on the show notes. He's a racist. Mentions in his story that police can't confirm that that the gentleman in the picture is not affiliated with a gang, but he associates with gang members.
Well, he referenced in his tweets convicted felon and gang member. And you know the thing, and we'll talk about more Sunday.
And then he refers to this gentleman and replies on Twitter as a gang banger.
That's fucking crazy.
And
the entire story, every little piece of information that the news reported came from the police. Law enforcement informs us. Then they have a retired law enforcement police officer talking about it. Then they have the police union representative talking about it. It's just this whole blue wall bullshit. But I didn't know we were going to talk about this, but it just literally Pointergate came out today.
It just happened.
And I honestly, you know, that just makes me sick.
It's sick. All right, we're going to devote – I'm going to spend some time doing a bunch of – some historical references and flashpoints, and then we are going to second by second and point by point just rip this apart, because I want people to see the deliberateness in their choice of words and what they chose to say.
Yeah.
And what it was meant to tell people and who they were talking to.
Absolutely.
Because that's really what's at the heart of dog whistle media and dog whistle politics. It's a coded approval for people to go after others. And it's disgusting. And it's just gross.
And that's the nature of a whistle is, on the one hand, it doesn't seem racial.
Yep.
And it seems innocuous. But on the other, it's like, hey, wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Yes.
You know? Fuck. I just can't believe it. I wish that more, and we'll talk on Sunday, but the more people that understand and know about dog whistle politics, and we just said the dog whistle with Mike Brown's tape, the secret, the more people that know about this, and just, we have to vehemently call it out for what it is and just shut it the fuck down immediately.
But the thing is, this is great that this happened, because they're giving such a lesson to us all.
Oh, yeah.
It's dog whistle 101.
Absolutely.
And it's going to be just eviscerated, I think. I think it's going to be really, really great to have people like us and many other much more larger audience individuals talking about it. And having something, because I think a lot of people try to say, oh, well, that was then. It's like, nope, this was yesterday in fucking Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Fuck.
Thank you very much.
It just, it's crazy. It's crazy that it works.
Oh, it works. Oh, it's so not crazy. It's not crazy that it works at all. We're humans.
Yeah, listen, that's true. That's true.
That is a human nature thing. You want to be inclusive and you want to, it's meant to take cues. Subliminal messages are real.
And they're
very effective.
Let's move on. So
speaking of subliminal, not just kidding. Nothing subliminal.
We've been talking
about,
lame duck blackness. I got to get a jingle because we don't have a lame duck blackness jingle.
Like Al Green, I'll be like lame duck blackness.
Something, yeah.
With President Barack Obama.
Maybe I'll work on that on Saturday. So PBO, President Barack Obama, has been in his second term, and we've had a few examples of his lame duck blackness. The most recent one was him referencing Cousin Pookie, getting him off the couch to vote.
Right.
So this might have been, I don't know if it was a little while ago, but it came across my desk and I just laughed when I saw it. So apparently Michael Jordan, who I know you're no fan of, was on a radio show, or maybe it was with Ahmad Rashad, and he was talking about President Obama, and he literally called him a shitty golfer. He calls Obama a shitty golfer. And I'll just read.
And you know what? When I read that thing, I was like, first of all, have you ever played golf with a president?
Well, here, let me read.
That was my first thought. And then my second thought is, who cares what you think, Michael Jordan? I don't care what you think about anything. Unless you're talking to me about basketball from 27 years ago, I don't know why you're talking about anything right now.
Well, listen to the swagger and shade that Obese came back with.
Right,
he said, he mentioned your first point. Mike and I, we know each other, but I've never played golf with him, Obama said. Michael wasn't very well informed about this. I think he might have just been trying to give Ahmad an extra ratings boost on the show.
Shade.
Clickbait. Obama continued, but there is no doubt that Michael is a better golfer than I am. Of course, if I was playing twice a day for the last 15 years, then that might not be the case.
Shade.
He might want to spend some more time thinking about the Bobcats or the Hornets.
Super shade.
You're a ding for playing Obama's lame duck.
Now, are those two teams? Michael owns two teams? Can you do that?
He's part owner in one, and I think he's owner of the other one. But yeah.
How do they let you do that?
I don't know, but he owns, I think, the majority of the Hornets, who are 1-3 right now.
You can't do that in football, can you?
I don't know. I
think multiple teams?
I think you have an interest in multiple teams.
Well, that sounds like a conflict of interest, though.
Maybe.
Interesting. I didn't know that. Anyway, shade from the president.
And again, too, it's like, listen, Michael Jordan's a fucking athlete, you know? He's like a superstar basketball player, and he's been playing golf for 3 decades. Of course he's a better golfer? Like, what the fuck is that supposed to mean?
But I think he said that he wasn't. Did he say that he was a better golfer than the president?
No, he said Obama was a shitty golfer.
Oh, okay.
And like,
because that's important for the president.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, really? Like, that's what we're complaining about? Like, well, he's a shitty darts player, too.
Yeah, he's a Republican anyway.
He fucking sucks at pinball.
Whatever.
Who cares?
I mean, MJ's a Republican.
He can't play horseshoes for a damn.
Doesn't surprise me. Mm-hmm.
What the fuck? I'd like to, what's the game we play here in Philadelphia they call cornhole, right? With the I bet you Jordan's a fucking terrible cornhole player.
I bet he is. I bet you he's horrible at it.
You know what
I bet he's terrible at? Horse racing. I bet you he's just a shitty horse
you know
racer.
You know what I know he's really terrible about? Speaking up about issues.
Yeah.
He's stuck in that black hume.
Black hume.
So let's move on to a couple other topics. So I was talking to you a little bit about my Twitter addiction. It's a bit of a problem.
It's a big problem. It's like...
It's bad. Problemo. It's bad. Well, and you said it the other day that like part of my addiction is like... Because it's like a game, right? Like
right.
Like,
I was saying like I broke down like why like you personally are so into Twitter. It's because like one, it's numbers. And
fucking
you
love, it.
Love numbers. Like
Fibonacci!
You're like numbers, 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 statistics, da, da, da. And then the second thing that you love is like manipulation of numbers. So
of course.
Now you have like levers to pull and all sorts of these other things that you're able to do. So that's, you know... It's a little crazy.
It is a little crazy. But I do enjoy it. I do love that Twitter game. And but so one of the things I've discovered, and there's a couple of different, I'll just sort of tell folks, when you reach a certain threshold with followers, certain things start happening. Like once you hit 1,000, like people randomly just start following you. Like, oh, you've got 1,000 followers, you know, let me follow you. And it's all this like, you know, movie quotes and, you know, weird shit that people are trying to like, I guess, build followers by sending their old weird shit. And you get like pornography and some other stuff. But then once I hit 2,000, it just went into overdrive. And I don't know if I got on some sort of like follow you, follow me, follow back sort of list, or like there must be an algorithm that people use that like this guy's got this many followers over this period of time and this many tweets. Let's go ahead and add them. And then you get like there's like a – I don't know, like the first person, like the icebreaker, right? The first person of a certain – segment or vertical thread within Twitter will follow me, and then like 32 people of that same vertical segment will also follow me.
Okay, so you've got like weird like tiers of people.
So last night I was telling you I got like 13 followers that are all like gastro Cuisinart people in like Louisiana and the southern
right
part.
Like Emeril followed you, and like all these other people did. Not literally Emeril, but like it was like some random person.
Correct.
In the mix. And
correct. Like and it wasn't Emeril, but I think the big one was sort of like a Louisiana gastropub magazine or something. And then like immediately there was like all these people like, I'm a chef in New Orleans. I'm a chef at this. I'm a chef here. And I don't mind it. I'm like, okay, but they don't really, they're not in alignment with per se my cause and the audience that I'm trying to matriculate. But so the one that was kind of interesting was music. And I don't know if other like Twitter people have the same issue. I'd be curious, like maybe like Rod at TGBWT, cause he's got a lot of followers and he's got a show. Like I'm shocked he doesn't get this shit all the time.
Right.
But so like people follow me and then immediately it's like, you know, follow me. And if I follow him, here comes the DM. Bing, DM. Check out my music, dog. Bing. Check out my mixtape. Bing. Here's some free beats. And like, honestly, and I did.
Free beats.
I responded to one guy who had something I actually kind of liked. Like, so I'm into an eclectic bit of music, but one of the things that this very white guy likes is sort of the EDM sort of like, you know, house music stuff. And in particular, the sort of like ambient chill kind of thing. And I know it drives you nuts, but I do like that
it's
shit.
It's not music though. That's why I don't like it.
Well, okay. So someone sent me something and I was like, oh man, this is actually, you know, better than the right shit that I normally get on Twitter. And he wrote back like, thanks, you know, like question mark. So I did get something that I want to play, and the guy sent it to me twice, and I really didn't bother with it because it's like, you know.
Well, what's his name?
So the person, I think it's this person. I don't want to quote the wrong words, but I think it's Snicker Boy, a.k.a. Chocolate Thunder.
Nice.
This is a Daryl Dawkins shout out, Chocolate Thunder.
I think we've mentioned Chocolate Thunder twice on this show now.
Yeah, because of our friends.
Kind of funny.
Our friends.
Because of the boss.
Boss, yeah. Chocolate Thunder. So this only has 800 views on YouTube, so it leads me to believe that he is the person behind it.
Okay.
But it was kind of, I'll let it play because, maybe you'll do this, you know, and I don't want to encourage people to send me shit on Twitter.
Don't do that.
But if we get stuff on Twitter that I think is entertaining, and full disclosure, I might mock you, but if you send it to me and it's entertaining, I'll play it here. So here we go.
Class. First thing first, I'm the whitest. Stop that, leg my ankles, try this. And I'm still in the lotion business. Like powder between the fat bitch titties. Right. You shouldn't want your knuckles like this. Or your lips, or your knees, or your wrists. Cup of rice, cup of salt, cup of grits. No sock, no lotion, I need a lick. Crisco or never chase that. Jerry Carroll dry like I'm bringing 88 back. Bring the cooks in, where my plate at? Lips so chapped, I can taste that. I'm so ashy. You already know, in need of Vaseline. From my head down to my toes, I'm so ashy. I said, crazy, I do this. I thought that you knew this. Can't stand healthy skin and honest, the truth is. Baby powder, I fought it. They smell it, departed. So stupid, I still sample was from the department. Get that lotion on time, that Medicaid decline. I swear I meant that dust will get a line of rewind. If I don't get that lotion on time, that Medicaid decline. My skin's so alligator, gotta stay on my grind. Now tell me, who that? Do that. Put baby, you're all over. I knew that. I be the A-S-S-Y, put my name in both. My skin peeling, I'm in here with some change of clothes. I'm so ashy. You already know. In need of Vaseline. From my head down to my toes. I'm so ashy. My elbows to old. Remember my name. I'm so low. My skin's so ashy. I look like I'm a dinosaur. My lips are bleeding. Hands so dry, you can start a fire. Yeah. Turning me up. Don't give a fuck, baby. Oh, yeah, it's a muck. Cheap, bro, you don't wanna touch. I'm so ashy. You already know. In need of Vaseline. From my head down to my toes. I'm so ashy. My elbows look old.
In the view, he's drinking Vaseline. I think you can stop it there. But it was actually kind of, and I should say, I can see now on the YouTube video, Eric Keaton. It's I'm So Ashy, and you can follow Eric Keaton on Instagram at Bank One Store Not At All. So Bank One Store Not At All.
All right.
Eric Shout Keaton. Out, Eric. I'm So Ashy. So I get a lot of crap, but that one kind of made me laugh.
That's pretty funny.
It was worth playing.
That was good.
Not too bad.
Pretty funny. That Twitter game. Love it.
That Twitter game. So did you hear about Alex from Target?
Yeah, but like totally confused me. It just seemed like a bunch of like white people. I'm confused by what
is it? Well, and I remember I saw it, you know, made the rounds, and dude went from like, you know, 100 followers to 500,000 followers, this person, Alex. And we decided not to talk about it. But then something else came out. There's like, wait a minute, maybe this is something there. So I can just actually play. We have another sound clip here.
Alex from Target.
Alex from Target.
Hashtag Alex from Target.
Alex from Target.
You know, a random guy at the Target is an internet sensation just for bagging groceries, and somebody took his picture.
Went on Ellen DeGeneres.
Wait, Alex from Target went on Ellen DeGeneres?
Oh, yeah, here he is.
My manager came up to me, and she showed me the actual picture. I thought it was fake.
She showed it to you on, like, her
phone?
On her
phone, yeah.
He has 500,000 followers.
He sounds really dumb.
Super white.
Do you feel now obligated that you have to tweet things out like you're a big celebrity? Or?
Oh, God. I don't even know what to say.
Oh, my God.
He's got wicked Bieber hair.
Have you had wedding, like marriage proposals? And
I mean, yeah.
That's amazing. Do you sing? Do you have any other talent? We should take advantage of this.
I mean, I can apparently bag groceries pretty well.
Oh, gosh, I think I bottomed it out.
That's right. It was a good response.
Completely clear. We had absolutely nothing to do with the creation, listing, or distribution of the photo, and we have no affiliation whatsoever with the company that is taking credit for its results.
That's the response from Target. So it went viral, and it was just a picture of this dude, Alex.
Right.
And it kind of went like crazy. People are tagging it. I love Alex from Target. But so apparently there's a company, Breaker, so it's Break with a R, company took the photo of Alex Lee. It was posted by a Twitter user named Abby, A-U-S-C-A-L-U-M. And they fanned the Twitter flames, spreading the word amongst our fangirl followers. And they got the Alex from Target hashtag trending. And then we added fuel to the fire by tweeting it to our bigger YouTube influence audience.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it went overnight. I don't know if they were just trying to do something and show that they could make viral stuff like that sort of.
Yeah, because I feel like this was the same thing with the Holla Back video with Rob Bliss's company. His Rob Bliss Productions, that's their like mission. They make viral videos, which is kind of a strange thing to have as your company's skill set, I guess, because who decides what goes viral? And I guess Breaker trying to say they can.
Apparently.
Yeah.
It's a weird, and I don't think anyone really could. Is there a formula? Like, it's just the right mix of.
It's a mix of things. I mean, I think the one thing that I can say is that if you get enough people doing it, then it will go viral. I don't know if I would consider that valuable or not.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if manufactured viralness is as worthy as non-manufactured, but it depends on what your aim is.
Yeah. Well, and then even
like, let's say Target had hired them.
Yeah, what would you think now?
Would this be successful? I would say yes, regardless of how they got it done.
Sure. Yeah. But Target's thrilled. I mean, the name Target, the mentions Target,
mm-hmm.
you know, I bet you that individual store where Alex works is, you know, their sales are up year over year.
I bet you Alex ain't working at Target no more.
Yeah, there's a lot you could do with 500,000 followers,
yeah.
you know? And I thought there was a little subtle comment. He goes, our fangirl audience.
Yeah, fangirl audience.
You know, and we used to, back in the day, watch American Idol and, you know, things. And there is definitely that, you know, female sort like of like 12.
Tweeny yeah, bopper yeah. type of, yeah.
And
they have nothing better to do.
I was just going
to
say, I don't know if it's that they're influential or they're just on social media crazy.
I think both. They have, you know, certainly percentage of the income they have access to, they spend all of it frivolously for the most part.
Yeah.
Even teenagers have things they have to spend their money on that are not just what they want to often.
Yeah.
Whether it's, you know, a uniform for whatever or, you know, dues for this or whatever it might be. But I feel like that tween age, it's like you have no expenses at all.
No.
And nothing, but whatever money you get, like you get to spend it on whatever you 100%. Want to.
Well, and, you know, back to Rob Bliss and his sort of viral production company, you know, there was a thread sort of, there's, I think, valid commentary surrounding, you know, did the video, was it edited a certain way, you know, inherently biased in some way, you know, what was
I would, but you know, my problem with that argument though, is that that would be valid if it was the only video
sure.
on well, street harassment, but it's not. So it's kind of irrelevant to me.
Well, and we talked about this, you know, about color lines and things. Just because maybe he's trying to make a name for him and his business doesn't preclude him from maybe doing good from this video having some beneficial impact on
street
harassment.
But I don't think anybody's arguing that it's because of it's a business. I don't think that's what anybody had a problem with. They were trying to say that the editing of it was racist. And
okay.
my point is, let's say it is. Okay, it's a racist video that shows assholes street harassing women. That would be valid if this was the only video about street harassment on the planet Earth. And that's just not the case. Well, Hollaback themselves have at least 20 videos
yeah.
that they have devoted solely to this case that have nothing to do with any racial undertones or anything. And plenty of other people have put out videos too. So to take this one and be like, this is why street harassment isn't real because this one video is racist. It's like, get the fuck out of here.
It also supposes
that.
Sort of, you know, some innate, you know, stupidness on the listening audience. Like, you mean I can't at the same time parse that this is about street harassment and maybe it also has some implicit bias? Like, I can understand those two things at the same
yeah,
time.
It's not that
well,
hard.
But, so the circle back point, the Alex from Target has zero redeeming value and benefit.
None.
So it was clearly the only purpose was to like, hey, breaker. And shame on us. We're talking about the company that did
it. And
it
kind of makes me think too, because I saw a bunch of stuff like they always have a spin. It's like, what about Felipe from Starbucks? Like a lot of people, there was like a whole second tier
really?
Of it. Yeah. Yeah. There's a bunch
because
of,
he was a white boy.
No, they were saying like, they just went like, let's stop talking about Alex from Target. And let's talk about, you know, Jesus from this place. And let's talk about Duran from here. It was just like a whole, like people just started putting up hot guys at work. Basically that was
that's fucking
in
hilarious.
Retail jobs, basically.
Well, and I didn't see much of
trying to get this shine on
the Ellen video, but apparently he's handling it pretty well. Right. Like what else can you do?
Yes.
Bag groceries. It's pretty funny.
Pretty funny. It doesn't sound like the sharpest tool in the shed though. I'm just saying, ladies.
Alex from Target.
Looks aren't everything. Just saying.
Well, and you know what? I don't want to say bothers me, but it's like, you know, that got trending worldwide.
Yeah.
Alex from Target, really?
Alex from Target.
People are fucking dying and
yeah.
shit's happening.
Can we
got the election coming up.
Can we get that J. Cole's douchebag trending? Can we have, that would be the hashtag. Hashtag J. Cole's is a douche.
J. Cole's is a douche. You know, maybe Breaker's whole purpose was a distraction from the election, right?
Maybe.
Conspiracy.
I don't know. Not targeting the fangirls. I don't think that's going to work
maybe
out.
Not, maybe not.
Because I'm pretty sure most of the voting public has no idea who the hell Alex from Target. I didn't even know until you told me you wanted to talk about it today. So.
And this will be the last we talk about it.
Thank
not needed.
Jesus
I don't even call it 15 minutes.
It's like
his
15
two and a half
seconds.
Minutes
yeah,
is up. Yeah.
Not a long time.
You want to talk about TV?
Yeah, let's finish up with some TV coverage. I wanted
Yay.
To give a shout out to Gotham because they punched me right in the face with
they
this
sure
week's
did.
Episode after I talked shit about them last
it's
week.
It's like they heard you.
They were like, oh yeah, bitch, how about this?
Oh,
how about Penguin's Umbrella, the best episode of the goddamn season, right in your face?
Leslie Mack's mad about it. Let's fucking bring out this one.
Seriously, it was, I'm not even kidding. One of the best hours of television I've watched in a
good.
Number of years. It set up so many scenarios, but let me just give a quick shout out to my dude, Penguin. Let me tell you something. This dude, He's the most diabolical of diabolical. He has managed to be a puppet master and look like he's got the, he's the one with the strings. It's some masterful ass shit. Well, and remember, the writing is fantastic.
If you remember when the episode that you were kind of down on, I said, yeah, but it was this set up Copperpot. It was all setting up this Penguin's Umbrella episode. And you have to do that. Sometimes you have to kind of, you know, slow burn and let some things go and then set it up for this sort of big punch. But yeah, I thought
it was just excellent. Everybody was excellent in it.
Who's the actor that plays Penguin Copperpot?
I don't know. He's new. This is his first thing he's done.
But he does a phenomenal job. His walk, his gait, his... And he just looks creepy like the Penguin, the way they have his hair. Even his eyes look kind of – it's just – it's really – there's a lot of homage to the original.
Yeah, his name
Penguin.
Is Robin Lord Taylor is his name.
And do we know him from anything
else? No, I don't think he's been in anything else.
Oh, kudos to him. He's been slaying it. Terrific.
Yeah, it was just really good. And all the, like, different nuances of the storylines that they did and – you know, tying up a few loose ends and kind of bringing things into focus for kind of, I think, what the longer arc of the story is going to be. And I think that that's the thing I really took away from it. I was really getting a little lost into, like, I don't want this to be the Jim Gordon show. It's not called Jim Gordon. And now I see that it's about Gotham. And to me, that's where this episode brought things together. And they cast my boo, Nicholas. As Harvey Dent, he's going to be on, I think next week is his first episode. I'm looking at Robin's IMDb and I loved
the scene with Gordon in the police station when Duke comes in and he's like, everyone leave, please. And the fucking cops leave and they start the shootout.
Oh yeah, that whole shootout. Awesome. All the henchmen that were with him, all the chicks decked out, all the... Everything about it visually was stunning, but I do have to say they need to get rid of Barbara. She's the worst chick in the game. Like, bitch, he told you to get away so he could do his business. You came back? Really? How about just cut his balls off and just have him out there with his dick hanging out?
Well, you know,
good job.
It was new to me, and I'm not as much of a fanboy, and it was obvious to other folks, but they kept calling their version of the Internal Affairs Division, who was sort of, at the end, they ended up saving Gordon. Right,
because they realized he wasn't a bad guy after all.
They kind of cast them as these jerks, and they kept saying, you know, MCU's terrible. MCU's horrible.
MCU sucks.
And what's MCU an acronym for? Online?
The Marvel Comic Universe.
That was hilarious.
Little DC Marvel action.
Good dig.
I don't know if it's on purpose or not, but...
Oh, come on.
Could be.
The writers, come on.
Could be.
But they do that shit all the time. I forget the movies, but...
A little Easter egg, if you will.
Well, but Spielberg had a movie, The Hills Have Eyes, or someone did The Hills Have Eyes, and when they... went into the movie, there's a trailer with a poster of Jaws, and they tore the Jaws poster in half, and then Spielberg did some other movie where he tore the Hill Have Eyes. So they do that kind of stuff, you know, it's sort of a tip of the hand and kind of a, like, wink-wink kind of fun way.
Right.
So I don't think it was accidental, especially because they kept saying, like, MCU's the worst! You know, MCU's terrible! Don't talk to MCU! Like, they really badgered it. And I had no clue. It went right over my head until you told me.
That's funny.
So the other show, in fact, they're on their farewell season. I'm sad about it. It's Parenthood.
Yes.
And it was on last night, and I don't want to, like, make, you know, like, dox myself as a bit of a, like, sap, a bit of a sap. But I did get, like, teared up with Julia and I can't his name now. Her husband,
Sam.
No. Julia's husband. That they're
Sam. His name's Sam.
No, the character, not the actor.
I thought the character's name was Sam.
No, it's I'll have to look it up. But so when they were, he's trying to get her back, and they're separated, and they're not together. And she said, "Fight for me," and he didn't want to fight. And then he goes and meets with her father, the sort of patriarch, played by the guy that was Coach. Why can't they give you their names? What's the time stamp?
Joel. That's his name.
Joel. Thank you. But Julia and Joel.
1 minute, 13 seconds.
They just have to get back together. Julia and Joel have to get back together. That scene with him telling them, you know, fight for her, fight for her. The acting was just amazing. It just was so touching. And of course, at the end, he goes and says, I made a mistake. I want to fight for you. I want to fight for you. And she opens her mouth and they end the scene. Like,
yeah.
Whoop, fade to black.
Yeah. It's just a well-written show. I loved I always love all the interplay between Max and Sarah's boyfriend,
Ray Romano's
character. I just think that this friendship they've been able to forge, and them showing both of the characters, one as a child, one as an adult, coming to terms with their Asperger's and what that means for them in the real world, has just been beautiful to see. I think they're able to play off of each other. I think Max can see somebody who is functioning in the world. He has a daughter. He's got a girlfriend. Yes, he's been divorced, but he has a business and he loves what he does for a living. And the other way, I think for Hank, it's a little bittersweet to see Max and know, like, wow, imagine, look at the development that Max is able to have now because he knows what he has to deal with and how to deal with it. They had a moment this week where Max literally said, I'm doing my exercises, my breathing and meditation exercises. And he says, well, it doesn't seem like it's working. He says, well, I just started them. The doctor says that I get like this when things aren't the way I planned them because I don't understand people's feelings, and that makes me feel isolated. Okay. Max says this. He's parroting what his psychiatrist has said. And it dawns on Hank as he says it, like, oh no, that's what I did.
Yeah.
I should have never walked out. What's wrong with me? Of course. And then Max says, but I don't understand it because most of the time I like being by myself. So why would being isolated be bad?
Yeah.
And Hank again has another realization. He goes, yeah, you'd think that, but it's not true. I like being by myself, but being isolated is something else. And it's just been wonderful, the writing and their interplay, and to show that somebody young can teach somebody older or something just the way it can be the other way around. And they've done a great job of having multiple generational relationships on this show, which I think is how it is in most families.
Sure, sure.
You know, it's not always just you talk to your brothers and sisters and cousins only. Of course, your uncles, they have advice for you, your grandparents and vice versa, your nieces. I just love all of that.
And I don't know if it was intentional, but so in the scene that you're talking about, when Hank sees Max pacing back and forth, what does he do? He starts pacing.
He said, well, I'm going to join you.
And every other person, even his you know, cousin and people in his life, they just sort of like, well, he's going, you know, pacing. Let me just leave him alone.
Right.
You know, let me isolate. And instead of allowing him to be isolated, he kind of started pacing back and forth with
him.
And crazy. Do you remember the scene that when Hank goes and talks to his ex-wife?
Yep.
I can't remember the woman that played, in fact, another Hank, Hank's wife on Breaking Bad.
Right.
But he kind of tells her, like,
Betsy Bear, I think.
Yeah, but it was so just touching and heartbreaking at the same time, where he kind of goes to her and is like, listen, I get it. You know, I've been seeing somebody. I've been talking to somebody. They said it was a toss-up, but I think it's a slam dunk. I think I have Asperger's. And she was kind of taken aback. And he says, well, the point in me saying that is that you know, problems we had, communication, emotion, it was me. It wasn't you.
It wasn't you.
And this almost like a wash of emotion comes over the actress's face. The directing, the writing, the acting, they've just been, you know,
it is.
On
it's
10.
A whole wave of emotion. And also he says to her, I imagine it must have been really hard to be married to me. Was it? Because he doesn't know.
He
still doesn't know.
And this show never pulls the punches. What does she say?
She says, yeah. It was. You know?
It was hard.
It was a great moment.
And I love that they're fading from the scene, so you almost couldn't hear it. But he says, well, you know,
Are we
good now?
And she says, yeah.
And what does he say?
He says, well, are we really good? Because if we're not, I need you to be direct, because that really helps me.
I love it.
And it was like, you
love
know,
it.
Just this great moment of catharsis and you know,
and
realness.
Of all the things that I love about parenthood, there's, you know, Peter Krause and all the different actors and people on it, the interracial relationships. They've got so many wonderful things. I really hated Ray Romano. I can't stand that show. I didn't like him. I thought the whole show was just wasn't for me. He has completely, like, I don't say destroyed, but as an actor, he's amazing. He's not, there is no Ray Romano. He is Hank, the Asperger's photographer.
He has disappeared into the role. And I have to say, one more, you know, Jim Carrey, not funny moment where it's like, here's a comedic, quote unquote, comedic actor and comedian that I find to be so much more adept at drama. And people always say drama is easy, comedy is hard. And so it would make sense able to do this in such a real way.
Interesting way of thinking of it.
So, yeah, just kudos. You know, I don't know if he's been nominated for any guest appearance spot. spots or anything, but he deserves the accolades.
I don't know if you remember, but when he first came on, they only signed him up for like a 3 or 4 episode.
Yeah, it was supposed to be just a few episodes.
Yeah,
right.
And now it's been like 2 or 3 seasons.
Yeah, they keep bringing
him
back.
He's a major character on the show.
And we'll see what happens in the end.
I absolutely love it. Yeah. I know we went long. Are we trying to keep it an hour?
We are trying to keep it an hour. We're a little over today, but it's okay.
Dial it back a little bit.
We would have been fine, except for freaking Pointergate happened. So, yeah.
Well, we like to end on a podcast standing, and I think you want to stand for a group.
Yeah, we're going to stand. I joined a new group called Black Podcasters United. It's a fantastic group of black podcasters who just support each other and help promote each other's shows and are able to guest on each other's shows. So I'll give them a shout out. So if you are a black podcaster out there, you can join them and find them on Facebook at Black. Just search Black Podcasters United. And I'm really excited. I'm going to hopefully get myself into a couple of other people's shows. And we're going to have Sherelle on here from Americans United Again in a very short order. And she's also a member. And we're going to be doing the great podcast Wife Swap.
With Chonilla.
In a couple of weeks, too, at the end of the month. So, and they also are a part of the group, too. So, yeah, it's
fantastic.
Awesome.
I'm glad you joined the group and that you're finding some more information and getting on other shows. That sounds great.
Yeah,
sounds
it's very pretty fun. Sweet. It's awesome.
Exciting.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's it for today.
We did it.
Episode 12 in the bag. High five.